Well, goodbye to AJ and Michaela, and hello to Allie and James. There's a lot of A's and J's on this station, aren't there, James?
Maybe there's something about A's and J's and gays that kind of all goes
Maybe.
Together.
We're just like, it rhymes, just hire them. Welcome to Drop the Subject.
I don't need any talent.
Yeah,
it rhymes.
Yeah, you know, I guess if you think of it alphabetically, I was probably one of the first. They were like, AJ and Allie Johnson. Let's just put, okay, we'll put those in the bucket.
All right, there's
welcome
Allie.
To Drop the Subject. This is a radio show, ladies and gentlemen. It's a little bit like a podcast, but it's different. There are more commercials, and you know, I thought we should explain it to people who are in the younger generations that might not know what radio is. You know, similar to people who still don't know what a dial tone is.
Oh my gosh! Right, or like a rotary phone.
Yeah,
you just have to explain to people that you, and they're like, "Wait, it took you that long to dial a number?" Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it sure did, and it actually was not that bad. There's something fun about turning those rotary numbers, isn't there?
It's like, very satisfying. Yeah,
and then when you have like three ones, you're like da 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 da
da da da. It's like popping the bubble wrap when you get a package. There's something like gratifying about that, like. You see, as I'm touching myself, I'm like, oh, it's something very gratifying about
there, James.
I am. It's something very like ASMR. Is that what the kids say these days? Mm-hmm, ASMR mm-hmm. about it. Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, well, we have an exciting show planned for you. We have the grand finale of our scavenger hunt, our quarantine scavenger hunt, which has been going on far too long, let's be honest. It's something that we thought was going to go on for maybe a month, 6 weeks, I mean, max 2 months. And what has it been, 3+?
March 13th is the day that California shut down, and we were home even before then, right? I think, did we go home from the studio before then?
James,
no.
I don't know days anymore.
I know.
I don't know how old I am. I don't even know if I feel like rotary phones are now. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we've gone back in time. I can't answer these questions. They are far too difficult, especially for 10 a.m. in the morning.
Just as a reference to everyone, today is Thursday, mm-hmm. May 28th.
Now, when we start going back out into the world, James, I feel like you have a leg up because, A, you have been leaving the house regularly during this time period because you've been going and working at the hospital. But two, A and two.
Two, B, you, one first, two and what B. I think, A.
You don't have to worry about your hair at all. And during this entire process, I feel like you've been at a very big advantage because you've been doing your hair at home, i.e. just shaving your head every couple of days for, you know, years, you said decades. So all of the people who look like cavemen and women now that are going to be re-entering the population and flocking into the salons, like for me, I don't think I know what the standard is anymore for presentability. Like, I actually have to leave the house today. I have to get fully dressed and leave the house today.
Oh, wow.
And I was, you know, doing my hair, and I was like, is this acceptable? I don't, like, I've been half doing my hair for so many months now. And I haven't really been doing the back of my hair. I'm just like, this looks okay. And then some days, you see me on Zoom and FaceTime every day. There are some days where I do nothing. So
right.
The fact that I have to now get dressed and put on makeup and do my hair all the way around, I just don't know if I can hack it. I'm worried that I'm gonna go into this situation and there's going to be some weird, like, flat part of my head and things like that. I don't have the confidence that I have what it takes to look presentable anymore.
Hashtag doing my whole hair. Right.
Yeah.
Not just part of it, not just the front of it. You, I will say it has been really interesting because so most of the time when I get ready to leave the house, I'm in scrubs. I also don't like shave my head and trim my mustache and whatever, like, to go to work. Normally, like, I'm right here, I'm in a hospital, like, and most of the time I'm wearing masks and PPE and all this stuff anyway. But there was one time where I was meeting with an executive at the hospital, and I was doing more like administrative work at work, so I actually put on business casual clothes. And it was very weird. It was odd. It felt disconcerting. And I was like I had put on my dress shoes, like my not super dressy, but dressy enough dress shoes and like nice pants and a shirt that I tucked in and the pants still kind of fit. And
that's a whole other thing. Yeah.
Right. Like things fit and the belt, I was still on the same belt loop, but like barely, but it just felt weird, like actually doing those things. And it's amazing how quickly we, our psyche and our, what our norms are for ourselves change when it's, I mean, it only been 2.5 months or I don't know, whatever. And it is a very, very, very weird thing, which is part of the reason why I dress up a little bit more, not only to score points and completely dominate you in the quarantine scavenger hunt, which we are ending today, but just so that I like that. I want to be prepared to, I guess, go back out.
Yeah. I definitely understand that. And it's like that thing of when you only wear shorts one season per year and an entire year goes by before you break out the shorts again. And you're like, oh, this is an interesting experience. These fit very differently. But I just wonder how it's going to change fashion as a whole, because there are a lot of clothing trends that are very uncomfortable, especially for women. So if we've now had 3 solid months of not having to wear those uncomfortable clothing, and then now you go to a gala or something and you're like, what am I doing? Why am I putting on this tight skirt and this and these heels? This is not comfortable. Why can't, like, there's something that changes in your psyche where you're like, I don't know if I really want to do this anymore.
I'm not doing this anymore. Is this when I should tell you that I ordered myself a new pair of heels?
Oh, congratulations. See, that's what it's about is figuring out what you want to do versus what you feel like you have to do. And that's the beauty of this whole thing. All right, the quarantine scavenger hunt wraps up after this. Don't go anywhere. The exciting conclusion.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Drop the Subject with Allie and James. It's like a podcast, but different. I'm Allie. That's James Simmons, nurse practitioner. We've got our producer, Jesse, who is not able to speak, or at least he only does when we let him. But it is time for the exciting conclusion of the quarantine scavenger hunt. This is something that we created here on the show on the airwaves of Channel Q a couple of months ago, mid-March, I would say, when all of this quarantine started happening. And we have a little scorecard that we've been keeping track of over the months. And there are several things on it that you get points for, like doing an at-home workout. That's 1 point for every day that you do that. A day without drinking, you get a point for every day that you do that. That was when this first started, everybody was binge drinking. I mean, we've calmed down a little bit, but this has been probably my biggest weakness, is going multiple days without drinking.
I also feel like now that in retrospect, we should have added a lot more points for that. Like going a day without drinking because of what you just said should actually have been way more valuable.
You're absolutely right. I don't know how well we thought this through. We probably had quarantine brain when we were creating it, but there are several other things, including attending a non-work virtual event. That'll get you 2 points. Someone tells you it's the flu and people overreacting. That's 3 points. Spotting someone wearing a gas mask. Man, that was a good one. 3 points. Spotting toilet paper in a store is 5 points. Seeing someone wearing a face mask in their car, that is 6 points. Spotting a group of 6 or more is 1 point per person. Seeing someone sneeze or cough without covering their mouth, that'll get you 7 whole points. Then getting fully dressed is 8 points. That's also my biggest weakness. Supporting a local business is 10 points. And then you get some minus points, like when you say it's just allergies when you sneeze, that's minus a point. If an outside person enters your home, that's minus 2 points.
There were lots of, throughout this, if you had not been able to hear this, throughout this, there was sort of lots of controversies as well. Like, for instance, if there are groups of individuals standing on a street corner, all wearing masks, but there are more than 6 of them, but they are more than 6 feet apart, did that count as spotting a group of 6 or more? Ugh. Right? We had lots of questions like this. We also changed, I believe, the point value of people wearing masks while driving throughout the competition, because as masks became mandatory everywhere, people sort of forgot to wear their masks, so then that wasn't as valuable. There was lots of flux in this, and most of that flux was primarily because I have been dominating the entire time.
Well, you know,
I do most games on this show.
Allie. That's yeah. Yes. you do pretty just, well.
I don't know if you know, had heard. Yeah, I do pretty well.
And not be playing What Year Is It anytime soon.
I am tremendous. There's no one else has played games
better than I have ever. Well, you graciously gave me triple the points this last week because this was the final week of the quarantine scavenger hunt. And I capitalized on the new Uber rule that everybody who is an Uber driver has to be wearing a mask. So I was very, very cautious about looking at people who were driving because I saw way more people with masks on in their cars. And that definitely helped out this week.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I believe it. I also have been capitalizing quite well because we did never clarify in terms of spotting a group of six or more where that spotting should occur and did it have to happen in person? So I essentially took Ocean City, Maryland this past weekend.
Okay, no,
and,
no.
You can't, and Lake of the Ozarks.
You can't do that.
And most of the beaches in Orange County. And I just started adding the people that were all together in a group of...
It's in person, James. So, you can't just look at pictures of groups.
Yeah, you also can't change the rules at the end of the game, Allie, just because you're not winning. So,
all right, well, you know what? All of this aside, why don't we reveal our final scores? Because the loser of this quarantine scavenger hunt will have to be added to a group chat of the winner's choice. So I do believe I played a good amount of catch up over the past week. But what is your official score in the quarantine scavenger hunt for 2020?
My official score, drum rolling, 1,287, Allie Johnson. Beat that.
Okay. All right. Just go ahead and write. You sure you didn't miss any decimals or any zeros?
I might have. 1,287 to the third power, Allie. That's what I...
Damn it. Why would you calculate it that way? Well, this isn't fair because my score is, now I'm embarrassed. I don't really want to give my score.
Yeah. So go on ahead out with that, Allie. Just drop the subject with your Allie Johnson. Your final score in quarantine scavenger hunt, Allie Johnson, is?
It's 524.
Okay. All righty. So we have a winner. Congratulations, James.
All right. Well, I guess.
I've also been playing.
Wait, who are you? Hi, who is this?
Jesse.
Caller, are you there? Too. Oh, Jesse. Oh, wait, you've been playing?
Yeah. I made the card and everything. Of course I've been playing.
Oh, so unaware that you were taking part in this, Jesse. I wish you'd said something for the 3 months that we've been playing it and you haven't said anything.
All right.
What is your score? What have you been doing? What?
So I may have went to the beach a few times that I shouldn't have. And so my score is 1,645.
What? No.
So you've just been going to the beach and counting crowds and raking it in without telling any of us and you swoop in with the winning score?
Yep. So I'm gonna go ahead and have you, Allie, join my sisters and high school age cousins group chat where they talk all about the Kardashians.
No!
Drop the subject. The new Channel Q.
That I don't even think I could think of in my worst nightmares. I have lost the quarantine scavenger hunt, and I have been added. Apparently, Jesse just came in clutch, and I won the entire thing, which he's been keeping score this whole time, and none of us knew it. And with over 1,600 points, he decided to punish me by adding me to a group chat with what your cousins and your sister who have some kind of a group chat about the Kardashians. So thanks a lot.
I don't think that's punishment at all. I think it's super exciting because, you know, Khloé has really been wanting to leave the show for a long time, Allie.
Stop it.
And so they got him the other day and she was like, I can't film anymore, you guys. Ugh. So you need to know the inside scoop of
James,
what's really going on.
I would rather talk about Donald Trump.
Oh, would you rather talk about Donald Trump? Because I mean, he made headlines again. I'm so shocked.
Okay, it's time to Trump around. When Donald Trump was elected president of the United States, Twitter followed and he ended up he's been tweeting nonstop ever since he got elected, which he was doing so beforehand, but it's something that has always been a topic of conversation when it comes to the president of the United States and what information they should be tweeting or should not be tweeting. Twitter has slapped some fact check labels on a couple of recent tweets that he made about mail-in ballots and them not being an accurate way to tally votes for the 2020 election. He was not happy about getting a Twitter fact check label. And now today, we are expecting Donald Trump to announce an executive order against social media companies. Because he really, 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 really wants to be able to do whatever he wants. And he apparently thinks that, he's kind of started this movement of people who think that social media is trying to silence conservative voices. And the executive order is still being drafted as far as I can see. But of course, we'll keep you updated. But yeah. It would make it easier for federal regulators to argue that companies like Facebook, Google, YouTube, Twitter are suppressing free speech when they move to suspend users or delete posts for being, say, misinformation or hate speech or whatever.
Right. Well, and this is so essentially what they're doing is there's this law, this Communications Decency Act, this particular section of it, Section 230, which has really for a long time since the mid 90s provided protection for social media companies and other websites that curate and moderate their own private platforms. And, you know, some people have described this as like the 26 words that created the internet. Like this very specific section is what President Trump's now executive order is going to go after, because instead of using that protection clause of the Communications Decency Act to protect organizations with free speech and them sort of being able to do what they want as private institutions, he's now saying that he wants to turn that around and say these organizations are not operating in good faith if they do things like slap fact check labels on his tweets or other things like that. And all of this is really in this huge sort of vein of I'm going to take my ball and go home because you're not playing by the rules that I want to. And also he's laying the groundwork for what a lot of his campaign is going to be about. And it's so interesting that in 2016, everyone was talking about how the campaign was rigged and technology and social media played such a huge role in swinging the campaign. And now Donald Trump appears to be using that very specific tactic of saying that social media has always been against conservatives, always been against Republicans. And now he's saying that Twitter is trying to directly influence the 2020 presidential campaign.
Yeah, he's literally saying that Twitter is meddling in the 2020 election, which you're right. I mean, it goes back to the 2016 election and the Mueller report and all of the meddling that took place on social media during that election, which he defended and said it was a witch hunt and blah, 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 blah. But now this is being done to him and it's this grave injustice that he now needs to execute an executive order in order to fix. And it's interesting how Mark Zuckerberg plays into this, because you recall that he was asked to appear before Congress to kind of explain the regulations that they have in place over at Facebook when it comes to political ads and spreading misinformation online. And he has backed up Trump in I guess so many words, because he says he did not think that Twitter should slap a fact check label on his tweets, which we were like, nee?
Well, and he went on Fox's Dana Perino last night and was saying like private companies should not be the arbiter of truth, which is why his company, Facebook, is not going to do things like regulate the information that goes on their platform. And Jack Dorsey like essentially slapped back and was like, us putting fact check labels does not make us an arbiter of truth. Our intention is to connect the dots of conflicting statements and show the information in dispute so people can judge for themselves. More transparency from us is critical so folks can clearly see what's behind their actions. So you be the judge of whether or not private institutions should be able to do this or not, and how far Trump's executive order will actually take us.
Yes. Well, we will certainly keep you updated here on Drop the Subject. When we come back, we will pay tribute to Larry Kramer. We lost a great one yesterday. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Drop the Subject on the new Channel Q. James and your Allie Johnson. Happy to be guest co-hosting again today. And, it's, you never want to say you're happy to talk about someone when they pass, Allie, because we lost a huge, huge member of our community, particularly those of us in the HIV activism world. And, but what I'm happy about, I'm sad that we lost Larry Kramer, but what I'm happy about is that we get to sort of take an opportunity to just like highlight everything that this like iconic activist did for the entire LGBTQ plus community, as well as everyone living with HIV. And you know, if you don't know who Larry Kramer was, this Susan Sontag quote is the one that kind of lots of people use, and it's really great. But one of America's most valuable troublemakers is how she put it. And Larry Kramer was a celebrated writer and huge AIDS activist who unfortunately died yesterday in Manhattan at age of 84 from pneumonia.
Yeah, and I mean, I knew him. When I had first heard of Larry Kramer in college, when we started studying The Normal Heart, among other plays. And, you know, when that came out, obviously, I learned about it later on. But it was such a needed piece of literature in the world, and especially raising awareness of the HIV/AIDS crisis in America. And if you haven't seen The Normal Heart, whether it's on stage or I believe there was a few years ago with Mark Ruffalo and Matt Bomer, there was a great, great movie on the play that was created by Ryan Murphy. And I'm sure you can watch it. And I would highly recommend it just because it's things like that, I mean, in addition to his activism, that just raise awareness and have really done so many wonderful things for the cause. And also to kind of go over his history and all of the amazing things that he did with his activism and how it plays into Dr. Fauci, who, you know, is so much in the spotlight now as a result of coronavirus. But Larry Kramer called him an incompetent idiot when they first met, but then they ended up being friends. And Dr. Fauci had some really wonderful things to say about him. Said, once you get past the rhetoric, you found that Larry Kramer made a lot of sense and that he had a heart of gold. So it's really cool to kind of reflect on some of the amazing things that he has done. And then somebody who is, you know, handling this pandemic to say nice things about him is really heartwarming.
It is heartwarming. And it was because of Larry Kramer and many people who had sort of what, you know, pretty aggressive tactics, if you will, in terms of protesting in the 80s. But what those aggressive tactics ended up doing was really pushing and forcing government officials to work around the government bureaucracy in order to get more funding into AIDS research and development of medications that could stop the disease. Because unlike now, where, you know, right away we talked about COVID-19 immediately, and this is a pandemic that's really influencing and impacting a lot of people. And Dr. Anthony Fauci has been in the forefront of this, and he's sort of this guy that we all love now. And back in the day, he was also sort of the figurehead of the government's lack of response to the AIDS crisis. And the AIDS crisis was very specifically affecting gay men in urban areas in the 80s, and no one was talking about this. And so Larry Kramer, you know, he actually went on to found the group ACT UP, which a lot of people have heard of, AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. And ACT UP is responsible for a lot of those very, very large in-your-face protests that happened in the 80s at like the New York Stock Exchange, St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. Like, a lot of these protests that happened that got publicized really well, wrote about, and memorialized in our history of activism were done by an organization that Larry Kramer founded. So, you know, he was an activist through the end of his life, and it really is a tragic loss for our community. And we celebrate Larry, and we thank him so much for everything he did for us.
I always love hearing about somebody who was kind of notoriously known for being abrasive and not necessarily being liked by everybody he met, and that that kind of didn't matter to him. His activism and the cause were more important than people liking everything that he said, and that's very admirable, especially today. So Larry Kramer, you're right, James, it's nice that we get to talk about somebody like him, because he was incredible, and he will definitely be missed, especially in the LGBT community, Q+AI community. And when we get back, more Drop the Subject. Don't go anywhere.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
A fresh new hour of radio here on Drop the Subject with Allie and James. And, you know, as people continue to quarantine, which I know some people are getting out and about now, there's going to be some hair salons opening up. A lot of shaggy people are going to be wandering into salons like hairy zombies. But there are some, especially if you are in your twilight years, there are some who are going to continue to keep their distance. And some people are getting very creative when it comes to how to see their loved ones right now. And oh, look who covered it, but our good friend Jeannie Mose.
Excitement builds. But her great-grandchildren never saw Nana quite like this.
Put your arms through the slots.
All right. Oh, my goodness.
After 2 months.
Oh, I love you. I love you.
Of no hugs, 85-year-old Rose Gagnon finally got to wrap her arms around her kitties.
I don't know how Jeannie Mose made that sound creepy, but she did manage.
I mean, it's Jeannie Mose magic, right? She can make the creepiest things sound sweet and lovely, and the sweet and lovely exactly. things sound a little bit creepy. And just to sort of set this up, by the way, I think she goes on to explain, but they're outside and there's a bunch of grandkids on one side of a very, very large plastic, like someone took Saran wrap and wrapped
and
it
like
around.
And like PVC pipe.
Yeah.
And made a big box.
With like armholes.
Yes, and then put armholes in it so that the grandmother could hug her grandchildren through this very strange apparatus.
I wanted to cry because I couldn't believe that this was happening.
And the kids, too.
We wanted to hug Nana.
So Rose's adult granddaughter, Carly Marinaro of Rockford, Illinois.
That's a made-up name. Am I wrong?
What was her name again?
Carly Marinaro.
Rose Gagnon and Carly Marinaro from Rockford, Illinois.
I mean, that is a Mario Brothers. That's like Mario Brothers' girlfriend would be Carly Marinaro.
That's very good.
Got to work.
I just thought, how can I do this? Not putting bags over my kids or her.
For under $50, she built Hug Time using PVC piping, plastic, and tape.
This is a group hug. Oh, yes.
So if I saw somebody doing this, and I don't mean to be a naysayer, because I know this is a very feel-good, positive story.
Uh-huh.
If I saw an old lady and a small child hugging through this plastic, I wouldn't be opposed to calling the authorities. I just feel like this is a little strange.
Really?
It looks very strange, and I understand the that it's nice thing to do for grandma to be able to hug her kids. I just don't know if it needs to be this. I mean, this is such a large setup. And
it's
then
huge.
There are like the armholes for at grandma height, and then there are two sets of smaller armholes that if it wasn't a grandma and a kid, this would be creepy.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. But I think it is I think we just leave it in grandma kiddo land. I do sort of like, here's the thing though. Didn't we come up with this idea already and you put it around your face and it's called a mask? Like,
right.
why don't we, because also in this video, no one's wearing masks. Like,
no.
Grandma comes up and she's got this big plastic barrier. And Saran wrap is great. It probably protects better. I don't know this for a fact, but it probably protects better than the cloth mask that a lot of people are wearing. So I'm all for it. But also, maybe if you're really that concerned that you're going to go through the effort to put this thing up, like, how about everybody wear a mask too? And then you're good.
It's very similar to what an Indiana elementary school teacher constructed in her doorway so she could give quarantine hugs to students. The rules say disinfect all surfaces before and after each hug, since the students are unrelated. Emergency room doctor Lena Wen wasn't crazy about the idea of kids doing the disinfecting and said the family would be better off.
Oh, come on, I got seconds here.
Okay, so the other thing is, as a nurse practitioner, you've told me many things about gloves and how they are pretty much one and done when it comes to use. And these gloves that are being used for the armholes are just like those kind of flimsy plastic oversized things that you buy on like Amazon, and you know where they come in the big packages, and you just use like I feel like chefs would just use them as like a one and a disposal. So the fact that they're using these over and over again, is that a problem?
Yeah, that's the other place I went to is that. So I guess if it's one grandma She's the only person using her the gloves on the side of her. And then a family that's already quarantined together, so they've already sort of been exposed to each other. Okay, fine. But in Jeannie Moses' example, if you have lots of different kids coming up using the same glove holes, here's the thing. You have one kid who's got COVID-19, they rub their nose. They then stick their hands in the glove thing, give their teacher a hug, pull their hands out, and then the kid behind them comes right up and sticks their hand in. All that kid has to do then is touch his mouth, nose, or eyes, and then he's transmitted the disease to himself if it's been a short amount of time. So, like, no, I love the ingenuity here. I think for a family, I feel like for Rose Gagnon and her family, great idea. But I do tend to agree with this emergency room physician, like, no, let's not have multiple different kids from multiple different families using something like this and then being the ones to disinfect it. Like, this ain't gonna work.
Yeah, and I mean, I know the desire is strong to hug grandma, but I would rather a regular hug than hugging through saran wrap. I think that it's nice, but then it's also so sticky, and then you're like, you got your bare skin up against the plastic, and not comfortable. But of course, always want to hug Dana. All right, when we get back, speaking of hugs, Disneyland, aww, Disney World is set to reopen. Six Flags and SeaWorld also set to reopen, but can you hug Mickey? Does Mickey want to hug you back? We'll get to that when we get back.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Drop the Subject with Allie and James, and it is getting closer to the time where you might be able to visit the happiest and most magical place on Earth. That being the Disney Eagle? World. What?
The Eagle?
The Eagle Gay Club?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's
the happiest and most magical place on Earth.
The most magical. Yeah, I think that magical is subjective and happy is subjective.
Oh, you mean like for everybody else? Oh, Disneyland.
Yeah, sorry, for Midwest straight people.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, Disney World. Oh,
you're a Midwest gay. You want to go to the Eagle.
Right, exactly. Sorry, I digress.
Sorry, now that we've cleared that up, They have made some announcements as far as when Disney World is going to be opening, and I believe the date that they have is July 11th. And, of course, they're also going to be considerably opening Six Flags and SeaWorld, but, of course, there's going to be restrictions. And I don't know if they're going to use that hugs PVC pipe method that grandma and her grandkids were using when it comes to getting up close with the characters. But they say that everyone's going to have to wear masks and you're not going to be able to get up close and personal with the characters, which is fine. But when it comes to wearing a mask all day at Disneyland, here's what you're going to look forward to. Mask tan lines.
Oh, uh-huh.
Screaming on a roller coaster with a mask on, which might make people have a heart attack.
I'm kind of for that anyway, because I'm also a big swearer on roller coasters.
Nice.
I love them, but I'm the guy on the climb on the way up where I'm freaking out. Where I'm like, get me off this beepity beep 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 thing. I don't want to do this. Whose beeping idea was this anyway? I can't. Let me down. Get me off. And then the second, like, the drop is done, I'm like, oh my God, that was the best thing ever. I'm going to do it again. Right. So for the sake of all of the children who are within earshot, maybe a mask over my mouth would be good.
Oh, I love it. I want to go to Disney World with you now, please.
I mean, I just want to see you
swearing off like a bleepity bleep bleep storm in front of like a 4-year-old and on the
Matterhorn
and her parents
or something.
Tennessee. Yes.
But, I mean, I try to keep, you know, when the kids are around, I keep it down low and I just like, you know, squeeze my husband's leg or something like that. But when I'm at Six Flags, I am letting it fly.
Well, you know, I'm also concerned about the log ride because the log ride, you're going to be getting if you're wearing a mask during that, you're going to be getting wet, and a wet mask, walking around in wet clothes sucks, and walking around in a wet mask, I would imagine sucks a hell of a lot more, but I also would think that a ride like that, you definitely should be wearing a mask because of the droplets. You got all kinds of weird ass droplets going in your mouth, and the water on those log rides, I don't think is super sanitary as is.
I mean, yeah, that's probably not water you're wanting to drink, really. I bet you they're probably not even going to have the water rides open, at least to start, just because of that. There's the waters causing it to, like, you know, aerosolize and whatever, but you'd think, Allie, that you would be like, if you're the CEO of Disney, you would be so excited that your park is reopening, right? So CNN interviewed Bob Chapek, the new CEO of Disney, who took over kind of right before the pandemic happened. And this is, I was so excited. Like, he is just really, really fired up.
We've done everything we can to open up responsibly, taking the guidance of local health officials, state health officials, national health officials, plus our own well-qualified doctors on staff to create an environment, to create new operating procedures, to create new policies, to do new training, new standards of hygiene. Obviously, Central Florida is...
I mean, isn't that exactly what you want? Like, just that'll just fire up your children. They'll be so excited to go to Disney World because this guy, who didn't crack a smile once, by the way, through this entire interview. I'm sorry, but if you are the CEO of Disney, there is a certain expectation that I have of you. I need you to be a business person, obviously, but also like it's Disney. Like, this guy was talking like he's the CEO of like a lawn company or something, or like a, I don't know, what is the most boring thing you can come up with? Like a paint company. Like, this guy's just like, yeah, we follow all the proper procedures and protocols. Like, no, dude, you're reopening. Like, you should be excited. Sell me on it.
I sincerely hope a CEO of a paint company is listening right now, who is like, hey! Also, that's CEO of a lawn company might be... So. That's true. That's your MO. Yeah. But this guy definitely sounds like Walt Disney's super boring brother, who didn't have any of the creativity, but was able to like get the bookkeeping done. And they're like, here's Bob Disney. And he's like, hi, guys. I just want to make sure everyone's being safe. And you're like, oh, Bob.
We've been able to, you know, attribute to all of our variable assets that we can account for. And, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, Bob. Oh, can somebody take the microphone away from Bob, please?
Yeah. Or like when he's at a dinner party or something and some kid is like, what do you do? And he's like, I'm the CEO of Disney. And they're like, wow. And he's like, yeah. And they're like,
But at least we get to hug the characters, Allie, when we go back.
No, you know what? We won't be able to hug Mickey anymore, at least for the time being. And I understand that might be really tough for some of the kiddos out there and some of the millennials that are childless and still want to hug Mickey. But I figured we would get the opinion of Mickey himself to see how he feels about this. Mickey, how do you feel about not being able to hug the kids? Ah, that's what I thought.
Drop the subject. The new Channel Q.
Drop the Subject presents News It or Lose It.
Oh, God, there are already so many texts coming through on this Kardashian group chat. Oh, my summer is going to be awful.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you so much.
I think they're going to make documentaries about me, too, like they did Michael Jordan. Like, because I'm just a winner, Allie. This is what I do. I win.
I was like, what? Oh, like, got it. Okay, yeah.
Where is he going with this one?
Maybe you could sell your shoes for $500,000 like he did.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Oh, that's great.
Let's get into News It or Lose It. I've got three stories in front of me. And James, you have a way to vote on whether we should news it or lose it.
How about I use this crucifix?
Oh, my God. Wow. This is very ironic.
Oh, there we go. That's better.
Okay. Well, I don't know how Jesus would feel about that, but we're going to go ahead and press on. Okay. Here's your first headline. Huge pet python goes rogue, bites owner, and wraps itself around her in a flash.
Oh, no. These things scare me. No, I don't want to talk about it. Is the owner okay?
I don't know. I think so.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, now I have to news it. So we have to know if she's... Yeah. I just want to know if she's okay.
Okay. Headline number two. Instagram will finally pay influencers.
What?
This might be handy for your dissertation. Aren't you doing yours on Instagram?
I am. How about that? How about
that? And then finally, headline number three. Pakistani villager urges India to return his spy pigeon.
Very good, Allie. You got me today.
Okay. A Pakistani villager is urging the Prime Minister of India to return his pigeon, which is currently being held on arrest on charges of spying. The man lives about 2.5 miles from the border of Pakistan and India, and he flew his pigeons to celebrate the IED festival or the Eid festival. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Eid. Police said that the pigeon had a ring on one of its legs inscribed with a code that they were trying to decipher. This is amazing. I love this old school carrier pigeon stuff. I want to go back to using carrier pigeons as a way, as a means to of communication. Screw that rotary phone. I think we should go further back in time to carrier pigeon.
All the way to carrier pigeons. Well, this is exciting that he had released the pigeons in celebration, but then one of them got caught because they thought it was a spy pigeon?
So the arrested pigeon, apparently, the Pakistani villager obviously owns the pigeon and said that the code is just his cell phone number.
Oh, to just return the pigeon if it gets lost. That makes sense.
Is that what happens? So if you found a pigeon and you were like, oh, you're lost. Oh, what's this around your leg? I guess you would. I mean, if I took the little thing off and read it and it was a phone number, I guess I would probably call it.
Just call it. Right. I mean, my dog has my phone number on his collar in case he gets lost, so people call me. So it seems to make sense if you're like, pigeons are a pet. Lots of people keep pigeons as pet, or this pigeon is like, are very valuable to him. Like, he doesn't want to lose his pigeons. I get it. But I also get that, like, everything that happens on that border, by the way, is like suspicious, right? Like, that's one of the longest standing global conflicts. Like, that's crazy.
Sure. Yeah. So you want to investigate suspicious pigeons. That's the word I was looking for. All right, let's learn about Instagram and how you could possibly make money from Instagram, which of course a lot of people already are. But Instagram has announced two ways that users with creator accounts can make money. They can now make money via ads on IGTV, and you can do badges for Instagram Live, which can also get you some money directly from Instagram. You know, a lot of creators, they are making money simply through endorsements. You know, when a company reaches out and says, hey, I have this great cat bandana company and I want you to, you know, put this bandana on your cat and I'll pay you for it. That would be a way to make money on Instagram. But now the IGTV ads will start showing up next week, and Instagram will split the revenue with at least 55% going to the creators.
Whoa, that's really interesting. I think that's sort of different motivation for creators, not feeling like they get to just be creators then and not have to like create for a brand or for a partnership. Oh, this is interesting. I'm gonna have to explore this some more, Allie.
Yeah, you could probably make a little money, James. Now, you don't like snakes.
I just need snakes to do their thing and I'll do mine. We just stay out of the way of each other.
I used to own a snake. I named him Chandler because I was a huge fan of Friends at the time. Don't laugh at me. I eventually brought him back to the little pet store because I couldn't take him out enough. And as some of you know, if you are familiar with owning snakes, if you don't take them out enough, they start getting aggressive. And I don't know how long it had been before this woman who owns this giant ball python decided to take him out for a little walk or a slither. There's a video of her opening the cage and being like, all right, how's it going? And it immediately comes out of the cage, looks at her, bites her on the arm, and then wraps its entire body around her arm trying to cut off her circulation.
Oh my God.
What are we doing?
How are we doing? Anxiety right now. Oh, what is going on? Allie, what happened to her?
Well, it seems that she's okay. The person that the filming eventually cut out after 2 minutes of them trying to figure out what to do. It seems as though she's fine. I think that a snake bite, I would imagine she knows how to handle that. Having owned a snake for a long period of time, but the video kind of cuts out after 2 minutes. So I don't have like an exact update for you, but
it's so
like
right
2 minutes of her being like, no, it cuts out. But it seems as though she's okay. And, you know, when it comes to owning wild animals, I think you should just, there's a quote here from UFC fighter Donald Cerrone, who said, if you're going to be anywhere near a python, it should be in the form of a leather jacket. Oh, man.
Oh, God, no.
I don't know if that's the best alternative. The jury's out on that. We'll be right back.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Welcome back, Drop the Subject. Allie and James, and wanted to give you some updates on some of the things that were going on in several cities last night and continuing into today in response to the murder of George Floyd. And especially in Minneapolis, there have been a lot of protests going on. There was a construction site that was burning in a large fire, which was near the 3rd Police Precinct that was yesterday. And here in Los Angeles as well, I know people are listening from all over, but the 101 freeway was shut down because of protesting as well. And that is something that, I mean, normally when you've got normal traffic conditions would be an insane thing, which, I mean, it has a little bit, you know, when it's shut down in this time, it's going to be a little bit different. But I think it's just important to point out because it's extremely significant, all of these protests that are going on and completely justified, because as far as we know, the police officer who was responsible for this killing has not yet been arrested, though we do know he has been on the police force since 2001. And there have been over about a dozen complaints made about him over the course of his time with the police force, which they say is a little bit higher than normal.
Than normal, yeah, because most officers, you know, I've police officers in my immediate, you know, purview of friends and family. And most police officers throughout their career have some sorts of complaints filed against them for whatever reason. So 12 is maybe, I mean, I don't know the specific numbers. 12 is maybe a little bit high. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, the individuals are protesting right now in cities across the country for a very good reason, because this type of situation keeps happening. And in this specific situation, like we've talked about before on the show, Allie, each of these circumstances is very different, but it continues to be white officers and black men dying. And in this specific incident, we have video evidence. And I think what really incited the protests to start yesterday, and now we're on day two in Minneapolis specifically, is that additional video came out, surveillance video from a nearby restaurant that showed the entire incident, that showed that Mr. Floyd was not resisting arrest, as the officers had reported to witnesses on the scene and as they had reported in their police reports. So, you know, the issue is that they're lying. It doesn't seem to be that we can tell that there was any sort of reason to pin him down in the first place. And then, of course, not to keep your knee on his neck where he can't breathe for, you know, 8 minutes. But, you know, at this point, protests are getting out of hand to the point where the mayor of Minneapolis, actually Mayor Jacob Frey, has asked for there to be no more tragedies. Like, we don't need any more things burning, people being harmed. And he actually has requested the National Guard to come in, while at the same time, he was one of the very first people. In fact, I think he did this yesterday or the day before, who asked for murder charges to be filed.
Yeah, wanted them to be arrested, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's also a question as to whether or not the police officer in question, his name is Derek Chauvin, or whether or not, so whether it would just be him, or I know that George Floyd's sister would like all of the officers on the scene to be arrested and charged with murder. So we'll definitely keep you updated on what's going on. But it reminds me of that, because I saw that video as well, the security footage, and it reminded me, because he's on the ground with handcuffs on behind his back. He's not fighting anybody. And it kind of reminded me of, I mean, it reminds me of many cases because this happened so many times, but Fruitvale, where mm-hmm. there were literally mm-hmm. these men just sitting on the ground with handcuffs on. There's literally nothing that they can even do. So the fact that those situations could escalate to where somebody loses their life, just, I don't know how that jump happens. It's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. And there's actually a connection, you know, with a former NBA player, Steven Jackson, who has been an all-star player. He won a championship with the San Antonio Spurs. He's a really famous basketball player who actually was George Floyd's best friend. And they actually called him Twin. And it was really interesting. He actually found out the news through his friend's mother, who then sent the video to him. And at first, Steven Jackson didn't even realize that it was his friend because he couldn't really tell. He was like, oh, here we go again. Police killing another black man. And then turns out it ended up being his best friend. It's just a heartbreaking story.
Oh, yeah. And it's one of many heartbreaking stories. It's unfortunate that we have to keep talking about this. But it's important that we do continue to talk about it the more, because it's just unbelievable that we still... that these things happen so frequently. And this is just on the heels of Ahmaud Arbery, which was not even a police,
Yeah.
All right, we will be back with more Drop the Subject, other things coming your way when we get back. SpaceX was supposed to have a big launch yesterday, and turns out their biggest nemesis was the weather. We'll get to that when we get back.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Welcome back to the wide, wide world of sports on Drop the Subject. This is James Simmons, your play-by-play announcer. With our color commentator today, you're Allie Johnson, and it has been a tremendous, exciting, amazing, fantastic time in sports right now. Nope.
I'm just entertained with the shaky voice.
Do you like that? I was going for like a Howard Cosell, but I didn't quite get there. I don't know what actually ended up coming out. I think it's probably because I haven't actually heard play-by-play announcers or color commentary in years. God, when are sports coming back? But
that's why, James, I wanted to share this with you.
Oh, please. Yes.
Okay, because... yes, you especially are jonesing for some sports and some commentary and some play-by-play. I understand the excitement and the thrill of some play-by-play, and oh, he's throwing it there, and then he's catching it there, and oh, he's penetrating the D, and all the great things that you're missing.
You said it. You're going to get in trouble for that one, not me.
No, that's true. They say in the NFL.
On the footballs all the time, right?
They penetrating do. The they D. They do. They say, talk about wide open receivers. It's all right, gravy, right. Baby.
Run straight through the gap. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a huge hole. I can't. We better stop. But yesterday, there was a SpaceX/NASA event, and Chris Contreras, please stop teasing me about it, because that continued to make its way through social media in terms of my grandfather not working or working for NASA.
Right then and there, you made it sort of a waffle. You were like, not maybe working or not working for NASA.
No, it was not a waffle. He worked for Lockheed
Caught
Martin,
in your own lie,
which
Allie.
Did stuff for NASA. I'm not getting into this now. The point is, the SpaceX launch was not a complete fail, but it got rained
scrubbed.
Out, basically. Yeah, it got scrubbed, and they have to try again on Saturday. But what I did not realize is that they do a play-by-play of these launches, and they had some commentary happening, like literally a sports desk with a man and woman in like lab coats in the NASA facility doing a play-by-play of exactly what was going on. So I thought I would share some of the highlights with you so that you can get your play-by-play fix.
Oh, why, thank you so much, Allie. Please, I cannot wait. These have got, I mean, and space launches are so exciting, so these have got to be like thrilling.
Okay. This is one of the big moments before the launch. This was getting close to the launch. This is when they were arriving. Take a listen to this.
Oh, it looks like we're seeing some people start to make their way into the crew access arm now, so we should see them get that dragon side hatch open in just a few minutes.
A door opening in a few minutes.
Maybe...
hold on, I've got more.
Okay.
Get a load of this. Seat changing.
That call out from the Dragon Corps up to the crew, letting them know that we are sending commands from the ground to rotate the seats, and you can see astronauts rotating in their seat back to a more comfortable position to get in and out of the capsule.
Well,
there are like Lazy Boy recliner play-by-play now. Like you can see they're getting more comfortable. In their seats.
Adjusting their seats.
So this, I mean, we have rocket. This is the best that rocket scientists can come up with in terms of play-by-play. Like, I think my bad Howard Cosell was better than that.
I would agree with that. And if you look at the video, it's literally astronauts sitting there literally twiddling their thumbs because they're like... bored as hell also and about to go into space. And you'd think that going into space, I mean, that's pretty exciting. Right. It could be potentially more exciting than just catching a ball and getting a touchdown. And this was the grand finale.
We just, we're just all sitting here. We watched Bob Behnken just climb out of his seat. Looks like he is out of Crew Dragon now, and Doug Hurley following suit. No pun intended.
Did she laugh at herself? Did she? Oh my God, nerd humor. I love it.
I mean, this joke.
Dragon now and Doug Hurley following suit. No pun intended.
And then you hear like the little laugh in the background. She's the,
and she's got like nerd laugh too, like, where it's like.
Oh, I mean, I love it. Like, listen, I am totally nerd out about my nerd things. I am never, ever going to make fun of space nerds, by the way. They keep our
people who
go into space safe, and they keep all of this. And I love it. It's super great. I just love that even they even couldn't even keep this thing like exciting or make it sound exciting at all. Like, really, the highlights of this were that they got comfortable in their seats.
And then left. So the highlights, if you're keeping track at home, were the hatch door was opening in a few minutes, and then the seats were being adjusted, and then they all left the hatch. And that's so they were doing. And think about all of the people that were paid and all of the resources that were used to get into this lot. And imagine how crappy it would. I mean, these guys have a great life. Trust me. They're
probably
living their dream. But you're like, you think you're going into space and then you don't go into space.
Right. Well, and they've been quarantined since March.
They've been quarantined.
They've been in quarantine. They need to get out and party. They have been quarantined since March. Very specifically, like, they were like, we are not taking COVID into space, right? So like, these two dudes were quarantined.
Ugh, we would, wouldn't we?
Right. Yeah, it would be us, right? The first time the Americans do something, right? And do a shuttle launch since 2011 on our own soil. Like, oh, great. We're the ones that took COVID to the International Space Station. But they've been in quarantine since March. And I'm sure they were like, oh my God, we finally get to get out. And not only do we get to get out, but we get to like get out, like the most getting out.
Get out of the world. Yeah.
And epic failure. Not an epic failure. It was just Mother Nature. She just wasn't ready. She was like, nope, I dictate this. So they're going to try again on Saturday, I believe.
Yes. And they said that there's a 50-50 chance that one's going to be okay because it's still dependent on weather.
Well, I think those are pretty good odds for most shuttle launches anyway. Usually their window is quite narrow and their percentages are quite low. So best of luck or whatever we're supposed to say to the astronauts and to the entire crew and everyone.
Break a suit.
Break a suit.
Drop the subject. The new Channel Q.
Okay. Welcome back to Drop the Subject with Allie and James Simmons. And, you know, we've covered a lot of different aspects of this pandemic and how it's affecting people. And one thing that I feel that we haven't given enough attention to, which is something that is going on all of the time, is disadvantaged youth who have been growing up in the foster system. And foster youth are in a tricky position, I mean, especially right now, but always. And adding the fact that May is National Foster Care Awareness Month, we thought we would bring on Maggie Lynn, who is the co-founder and the Los Angeles Vice Chair of Foster Nation. Maggie, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Why don't we just start off with Foster Nation and what it's all about?
Sure. So I founded Foster Nation about 3 years ago, and our mission is really to engage the community to support and empower foster youth as they age out of the system. So many foster youth age out when they turn 18 or 21 with nothing but a list of homeless shelters and a few trash bags, and they're told, you know, good luck with your life. And so our goal is really to be that support system for foster youth as they transition out of the foster care system. And for a lot of youth, I mean, when you turn 18, what do you actually know about being an adult and having to navigate the real world? And so our mission is really to be that support system and to provide the resources that they need to thrive as they become self-sufficient adults.
This mission is so incredible, Maggie. It's amazing that you're taking time to talk to us about it today. And thank you so much for coming on about that. And in particular, I think this has gotten a little bit of more of attention recently because of COVID-19, obviously. And in particular, there are foster youth and other disadvantaged youth whose primary housing and source of food was school. And now that universities for a while now have not been housing individuals in dormitories, you know, right, youth have not really had much of a place to go. Can you talk a little bit about sort of what are some of the issues that foster youth that have aged out of the system or that are part of your organization have faced specifically with COVID-19?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. A lot of foster youth students do rely on college campuses for life, for sustenance. You know, they would go to their college campuses for whether it's meal vouchers or a meal pantry where they can get, you know, a snack. Sometimes that's the only thing that they eat that day. And a lot of students were also going to their college campuses. Of course, if you're in a four-year college, that's where you live. And during this pandemic, as every student is going home, you know, a lot of these students that grew up in foster care are having this moment of like, whoa, where is home? Where do I go? Who can I lean on? I actually read a really interesting article when the lockdown first happened, and the title was called "College Made Them Feel Equal. The Pandemic is Making Them Realize That Nothing's Equal." And it's kind of this idea that, you know, you might have grown up in the foster care system. Many of our foster youth students have moved through 30, 40, 50 different homes before they even turn 18. And so, you know, when they finally make it to UCLA, Riverside, or, you know, Santa Monica College, they realize, oh, I've done it. I'm here just like everyone else. And it's this idea that this pandemic is making them realize, oh, I'm not like everyone else, because everyone else is going home. Everyone else has a roof over their head, and, you know, they have food on the table. And so really the three main issues that foster youth students in college face right now, number one is food insecurity. So a lot of foster youth students no longer have access to these meal vouchers or the meal pantries on campus. And so they are essentially going without food. Most of them don't have income or, you know, money to buy food. And the second issue is the digital divide. So a lot of foster youth students used to use public computers to do all their homework, to do their research, to respond to emails. And, you know, if you don't have access to a laptop, you can't do your work. And given that all the classes are now going online, foster youth students are falling behind and not completing their classes because they don't have access to technology. And then the last thing is, as you mentioned, housing. You know, we have a ton of foster youth students that have indicated they're sleeping in their cars. They are in and out of homeless shelters. And, you know, some of them are, you know, have somewhat stable housing, but they're concerned about paying rent. And so there are, of course, a lot of issues. And as Ali was mentioning, these were issues that always existed before COVID. COVID has just kind of put a magnifying glass on all these issues.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, you take all the stressors that you go through when you get to college, and then when you graduate, all of the stressors around getting a job, and how much added stress there is for foster youth, and especially now. I mean, it's just all so heightened. And we're really happy to be talking with you, Maggie. We're going to continue, if you can stick around. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Foster Nation, how you can help, and what Meal Nation is all about. It's a great new program that's coming out of Foster Nation. So we'll talk about that when we get back right here on Drop the Subject.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
All right, welcome back to Drop the Subject. James Simmons, guest co-hosting with your Ali Johnson. And we have the pleasure of continuing our conversation with Maggie Lynn, who is the co-founder and Los Angeles vice chair of Foster Nation. And we're having this really fascinating conversation about how COVID-19 is uniquely impacting disadvantaged youth in the foster care system.
Because I've read a lot about how there have been new resources. I know in the Bay Area, they were having some homeless people staying in hotels. Is there anything that's being offered to disadvantaged youth right now that's similar?
Sure. That's a great question. As far as housing, it's really a very big challenge. We have a lot of students that are sleeping in their cars. And one thing I want to bring up as far as what our organization is doing is we've put together an emergency food program called Meal Nation. And what we do is we're tasked with the challenge of meeting students where they are. So we have two partners in this program. One is Hunger Not Impossible. It's a technology company that allows foster youth to text hungry once a day and pick up food from local restaurants around them. And that helps us address foster youth students who don't have stable housing, who are sleeping in their cars or in their homeless shelters. So if they're today in Venice in a homeless shelter, they can get food around them. But if they move to a different homeless shelter, they can still type hungry and pick up food from local restaurants around them. The other partnership is with Every Table, which is a meal delivery service. And that helps us address the students who have young children at home, who don't have access to transportation, but have stable housing. And then, of course, we have a group of students who don't fit in either. They either live in a food desert or they have no resources. And so that's, you know, those two partnerships allow us to at least provide foster youth students a meal a day that cost us $7, which we are crowdfunding from the community.
Yeah, tell our listeners a little bit about where they can sort of go to help find out more about Foster Nation and what the organization is doing, but also this very specific initiative that you just mentioned.
Sure. So you can go on our website, which is fosternation.org. And on the homepage, you'll find all the information about really how we're addressing food insecurity. And because of our incredible partners, we're able to provide a meal a day to foster youth students for $7. And we have made a commitment of feeding every foster youth student in all the community colleges here in LA County a meal a day for up to 60 days, given this stay-at-home extension. And we're serving 526 foster youth students in 18 different community colleges now. And this week, you know, as we raise more money, we are hoping to expand to Cal State universities, all seven within this region, to serve the foster youth students there. So that's something that, you know, we are constantly just fundraising around. But the other thing that I'd like to mention is that a lot of the community, it's just been incredible to see the community really come together, because $7, you know, even if you are struggling to provide a meal to somebody else who really needs it, is, you know, is just something that we can all do. And I think in this pandemic, we are certainly stronger together as a community. And so, you know, I get feedback every single day from students that one of them that really struck me was like, this one meal a day that I have is providing me the nutrients that I need to breastfeed my 8-month-old. Yeah, I completely lost it. Like when I got that feedback, I literally was at my desk working. I just like had a 15-minute meltdown, total meltdown.
Totally. Right.
Yeah. But it's insane, you know, and these are things that, you know, for me, when I hear my friends complain about like having to go to the Bristol Farms and wear gloves and like, you know, going to Italy and then they make you put gloves over your gloves, I'm like,
going to Italy.
Yeah. Right. They don't have Marco Secco at Italy.
Right. I'm like, let me give you some perspective, my friend.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So
I really don't have food. Wow.
Certainly an opportunity to bring some perspective to that whole conversation about where we are in terms of our privilege and how we're not all experiencing this whole thing the same. So thank you so much, Maggie, for bringing that opportunity to us and our listeners.
Maggie Lynn is the co-founder and Los Angeles Vice Chair of Foster Nation, an incredible organization that is helping empower foster youth who are aging out of the system to live a self-sufficient life and be well. And especially right now, you know, it's important to help out. If you even $7 is nothing, guys. I know that it's times are hard for a lot of people. $7 will make a difference if you go over to www.fosternation.org. Maggie, it's been a pleasure. We're obviously in awe of what you're doing, and any way we can help, we're happy to.
Thank you so much.
Drop the subject. The new Channel Q.
All right. It was wonderful to talk to Maggie Lynn from Foster Nation. Of course, it is National Foster Care Awareness Month. It's also Mental Health Awareness Month, which is always important. And something that I did not know, James, is that did you know it's another month? There's another one.
Are there? Well, I know that there are often very odd ones that come along in months like this. Like it's like Peanut Butter Awareness Month, or it's like, you know, like Purple Dinosaur Shaggy Carpet Awareness. But, you know, like random ones. But I didn't know. Is there another big one?
Well, I would love it to be Peanut Butter Awareness Month. I think that kids with peanut allergies would really hate the month of May if that were true.
Right.
But it is National Masturbation Month.
Oh, what is that?
Well, I think it's a month that people have been celebrating since March as a result of COVID-19.
Over and over and over again.
But thought we'd bring to the airwaves of Channel Q here in a radio-friendly way an article that It talks about a very specific thing that happens to a lot of people when it comes to self-pleasuring. And I'm talking about self-pleasuring to somebody that you hate. And what is the science behind why you want to do that? I thought, in honor of National Masturbation Month, we could kind of break this down and maybe dispel any rumors about hate-sturbation.
I love that it has a name for it. Hate-sturbation. That's pretty good.
I have never done this before. I don't know if you would feel comfortable talking about that for you, but there was only one guy in college that I really hated, and he was very, very good looking. And I didn't want to, I didn't ever self-pleasure to the thought of him or anything like that. But there was a couple of times where I was like, man, I really wish that that guy was into me so that I could reject him.
Okay. Yes. I have had similar thoughts and responses as well. Like, oh, this person, especially when I've been on the side of like, I was really into someone and they weren't into me. I was like, man, I wish the tables would turn just so I could make them feel the way I feel. Like, right. That whole thing. But no, I'm not sure that I have ever, because, you know, our brain is our biggest sex organ, right? Which sort of goes into why some people do have a thing about hate-sturbation, and that there is, you know, our brain and that connection between power and control and sex, those things all sort of go together. So if an individual can have the opportunity to take back some power and control from someone that they maybe despise or hate, who is in a position of power and control, that can be very sexually gratifying, that can be very enticing and turn them on, if they will.
Power does come into play, and I will give you one example from this article, which is on Mashable. There is a woman named Holly. I'm assuming that's not her real name. And she had a temporary boss who was covering for somebody on maternity leave. She described this man as rude, arrogant, massively misogynistic, and he was a royal D. Can't say that word. Uh-huh. He was not someone that she would have ever chosen to associate with, but one night when her boyfriend was out of the house, she decided to, you know, engage in some alone time. And she started thinking about her boss. And despite hating the guy, Holly found herself very excited by the way that he commanded attention. And she said in her fantasy, she was then the one demanding attention and taking control. She was the one making him feel small, begging, and weak. And she got a big kick out of it. And that's what I think the point here is that it's the power shift that you're discussing, right, James, where it's you feel like, you know, and sex a lot of times is about dominance versus submission and things like that. And you feel like if you can turn the tables in your mind, that is exciting, both literally and figuratively.
Sure. And they, you know, these researchers go on to talk about how it also has a connection to sort of like hate sex as well. And that hate sex also has very similar dynamics in it, but that, of course, that is sex with someone else. So then it needs to be mutually consensual, and two parties need to understand the nature of the sex that they're having. But if you're alone and you've been self-pleasuring since March, I think this might be a new sort of thing for you to try out here.
Yeah, a little new tonight. Nooks and crannies to explore. And I guess I'm probably going to have a fun night with our Kardashian tonight. We'll be right back.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Hello there, Drop the Subject. That's right, that's what you're listening to. Do you think you were listening to something else? Well, too bad, you're here, and probably queer. And I'm Allie, and that's James. And a little later in the show, in fact, after this, we will be talking to Jeffrey Masters from the LGBT Q&A podcast. Great host, writer, podcast creator. He's interviewed all kinds of people, Laverne Cox and Pete Buttigieg and many others. And his new season premieres today. We're going to be playing some of his stuff here on Channel Q during Pride Month. So very exciting. We'll talk to him in a bit. But before we do, we must reveal the new gay, gay, or cray, cray, because it is Thursday Day. Crazy. All right, I have a story. You have a dream.
Let's do this.
I have a story about a couple, and I will give you as many details as I can without revealing the gender pronouns or the names of the people involved. Then you will guess whether it is about a gay gay couple or a regular hetero cray cray couple. In this case, I give you another story about a couple coming out of Costa Rica. You know, we talked yesterday about that lesbian couple that got married in Costa Rica. First gay marriage on Costa Rican soil.
Yeah, and nationally televised. It was great.
Yes, absolutely. I tell you a story of a couple who is in Costa Rica because they are stuck there on their third date. They met on Hinge. They're a Hinge couple. They met on a dating app and have been stuck in Costa Rica for more than 2 months after traveling to the country just on a spontaneous third date.
Wow.
They met on Hinge in New York City in early March. They were having a good time. Both of them non-committal. Okay, so that might give you some indicators as to gay or cray.
Well, they might be. Okay. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
After their second date, they both joked with each other about needing a vacation. So one of them said, why don't we go to Costa Rica together? And the person says, we were just joking about how we both needed a vacation. I said, let's go someplace warm. Let's just get away. Stuff like that. Very much kidding around. But then it turned real because neither one of us backed down.
Oh.
The person said, I'm always testing people. And when they weren't backing down, I thought, all right, let's just keep this going. At the time, flights were cheaper than normal because coronavirus had just begun to spread to other parts of the country.
Mm.
But it was not yet that crazy, especially in the U.S. So they decided to get a cheap plane ticket, go to Costa Rica. And the first few days on vacation was, you know, fun third date couple crap like zip lining. And then they realized soon after that their hotel was getting emptier and emptier. And on day four, what was supposed to be a 5-day vacation, they announced the level 4 travel advisory in Costa Rica. And then everything started to really shift. Now they are on day 67 of their third date.
Oh.
And they said that they've been enjoying the time that they've spent together. But they didn't have expectations of what their relationship was going to be like. And both of them weren't really planning on having a relationship. And I will say, in one of the pictures of them in Costa Rica, one person in the couple looks happier than the other.
Uh-oh, right. As is often the case, particularly early on.
Exactly.
Right? I think that's okay.
What do you think? What are you thinking here, James? Just it's Ooh. Not the craziest story ever, but you know, a spontaneous trip, usually a third date international trip, is not something conventional per se. But now they are in a very unconventional situation because they've been on their third date for over 2 months and seemingly still a couple. Though I don't know if they really want to be a couple. I would imagine they're probably going to be breaking up when they do get back to New York City. What do you think? Do you think that this is a gay couple or a cray hetero couple?
So listen, I think that, you know, the spontaneity actually doesn't have me lean one way or the other, believe it or not. I know plenty of spontaneous straight people who maybe in their 20s or early 30s would have done something like this. So that is one thing. However, the ability to just get up and go for 5 days, I think, can be one thing. So that this, whoever this is, they probably don't have kids, right? Or like massive responsibilities or work that they cannot do remotely. So that still doesn't lead me any particular place necessarily, but I imagine that they're young. They have some discretionary income, so probably gay would be my guess. I think I'm gonna go. Yeah, I think I have to. I think I gotta go. I think this is
it's cray cray all the way.
Oh man, this one's really hard. I really can't decide either way. Yeah, I'm going cray cray. I'm going straight cray cray couple.
All right, I have an audio answer for you here, James. And I know you have a great track record here when it comes to winning games on Drop the Subject. Let's find out.
What's up, everyone? My name is Matt, and I'm on the longest third date in history. See, I'm not usually the relationship type, but thanks to Corona, I've been on this date for the last 53 days, all while being quarantined in Costa Rica. So who's the girl? Get to that in a second.
A girl. And her name is Connie, and they are having a good time, though I don't know if Matt is necessarily having as great of a time, but he's a YouTuber, so he's going to document it regardless. We'll see what happens. And yes, He does have a man bun. Okay, I knew that went without saying, but I thought I would say it just for formality's sake. We'll be right back with Jeffrey Masters from the LGBTQ&A podcast after this.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Welcome back to Drop the Subject with Allie and James Simmons, who is guest hosting with me yet again. And get ready for more screen time, gays, because Virtual Pride Month is upon us. And we wanted to share an exciting new partnership that we've got going on with incredible host, a writer, a podcaster. I'm sure you've heard of him, the creator of the famed LGBTQ&A podcast. Jeffrey Masters is here with us on Zoom. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey.
Hello, ladies. Thanks for being here.
You know, I didn't realize that you are in Palm Springs right now. So anybody listening on 103.1, you've got a gay in your town right now.
Come find me. That's why I'm wearing a tank top. Is anybody offended?
No,
it's like
think
the bat signal in Palm Springs.
I was just going to say, right, everyone in Palm Springs right now is like clamoring, please, more people be outside in tank tops. We need this.
I know. When straight people interview me, I wear sleeves, but, you know, probably take a risk.
Right. Yeah. You should be surprised. Like, I'm not in full drag right now. That's a whole other conversation.
Surprised and disappointed.
And disappointed.
He's
well,
got
okay.
heels on. You've got heels on, don't
I
do. You?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always have heels on. Hello. Listen, Jeffrey, we got to do a little bit of business while we're here. So you're the new season of your podcast launches today. And so for the few folks in the LGBTQ plus space who are not familiar with you and your podcast, tell us a little bit about, you've got this partnership with Channel Q. There's a partnership with GLAAD going on, The Advocate, and the new season today. Sort of break it all down for everybody.
Yes, I love partnerships, as you can tell.
Yeah, seem to be good at it.
Yeah, thank yeah. you. So far, so good. But yeah, LGBTQ&A, that's with an ampersand. Everybody likes to know, like, what is the Q&A for? Like, what does the A stand for? It's question and answer. I'm just really clever, okay? It's a joke.
I thought it's... insanely clever and didn't require explanation, but apparently you do need to explain it to people.
Apparently, yeah. Like 5 years ago when I like thought of the name, I like Googled and was like, this is so dumb. Like, I can't be the first person, but it's true. I'm, I guess, the smartest person in the community. What can I say?
Yes, you are. We're so blessed to be in your presence.
I agree. Thank you. But yeah, it is an interview podcast. It's been running for 4 years. We interview artists, actors, authors, politicians. Pete Buttigieg was on last year, Laverne Cox. And it sounds so dumb, but like there's, you know, a million podcasts in the world right now. But 4 years ago when I started mine, there was like three gay ones. Oh, and before I offend anybody who had one, there was a lot of gay ones, but none who were like mainstream. None, you know, being produced by the NPRs, the WNYCs. And so I thought that like we needed to like have a single place to have like different interviews with like the full spectrum of the community, high and low. And so I've been doing that ever since. And as you said, racking up partnerships along the way.
Well, I want to know, I mean, yes, you've interviewed some incredible people, Pete Buttigieg, Laverne Cox, and Robin Crawford, who famously came out as being romantically involved with Whitney Houston, most recently Alice Wu from The Half of It. And I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, who is on your gay Mount Rushmore more of best interviews ever?
That I've interviewed or that I want to interview?
Ooh.
Two-parter. I like it. Go for both.
Okay, let's start with the sad answer.
Always start sad. That's definitely a great
one. Right, that's the way to go.
Is that
right.
A comedy trick, right? Start with the tragedy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really effed up, but I live in New York City. I moved there in January, and I was used to joke around that I wanted to interview Larry Kramer before he died. And I was going to in February, but he, you know, was sick. He wasn't feeling great and we had to push it. And then the pandemic screwed me over. And you know, Larry Kramer died yesterday. And so now I will not be able to do that.
Wow.
So I can't. He was on the Rushmore.
Yes, absolutely. And then what about people that you have interviewed?
Some of my favorites. So I love the really like historical people that from like queer history. So like Ivy Bottini is this 93-year-old lesbian. And she is this, I mean, she's been in activism for 50 years. She worked with Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan in the 50s and 60s in New York City. When the Feminine Mystique came out, she read it and was like, oh, absolutely not. I want to get out of my house. And then Betty Friedan kicked her out of the women's movement because she was gay. And then Ivy moves to LA and joined like the queer movement here. She formed like the first HIV support group for gay men in the 80s. She's part of the founders of the first like retirement home for LGBTQ seniors. And I just love like hearing those older stories because as we know, like the queer experience has changed so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed dramatically. And in particular, like even in the times of COVID-19, especially, and kind of what's your take on, I'm really interested to know sort of what, like for you and the podcast, we're moving into Pride Month, right? And I mean, the timing of this first episode and launch or the new season, I'm sure are on purpose, but it's a very different Pride world that we're living in right now. And so what is sort of your take on this and where you see this going as we go into Pride Month?
Yeah, I think it's really complicated as we know, right? Because we don't know like what the future is. We don't know what to expect. And anyone who like tells you a prediction, it's just like a TBD thing. But I talked to Maria Town yesterday. She is the president and CEO of the American Association of People with Disabilities, and she's queer. And she was saying how amazing it is that Pride has gone virtual to include, because now people with disabilities can be a part of it at a greater number than they could have. And that's something that I hadn't thought about before when I used to roll my eyes at like a DJ doing Instagram lives 3 days a week. That is so shady for my best friends or DJs. Cut the tape, roll back.
No, you can't say, no pick backseats, Jeffrey.
It is okay to talk a little mess about DJs here. It's fine.
Okay, fine. Okay. So they're all horrible. Listen, I'm waiting on a text back. Maybe I'll change my answer.
It's crapping on DJ's hour here on Trump the Subject.
Yeah. But I mean, like the people with disabilities, it is the largest minority group in the world. You know, there's like a billion people in the world. And I believe LGBTQ adults have a larger percentage of disabilities than the general population. And so just having that conversation made me think, oh, virtual pride isn't just a fix. It could be a necessity for large aspects of our community.
No, it is amazing to think about how much content people can now take part in where they weren't able to before. And, you know, even little events where, you know, you would have to see it in person. Now people from all over the world can experience some of this stuff, which is, you know, kind of a silver lining when you think about it. All right. LGBT Q&A, the new season kicks off today. We will be bringing the show to Channel Q for Pride Month. I'm sad to say that we are out of time, but Jeffrey, it's been a pleasure having you, and I'm sure this won't be the last time we're speaking.
Okay, I promise. Thank you. This is so fun.
Love your tank top.
Thanks, guys.
Drop the Subject. The new Channel Q.
Drop the Subject presents News It or Lose It.
Dropping of the Subject. On the new Channel Q, James and Allie here, and it is that time again in the show where I have three headlines. Snooze it or lose it, and Allie decides whether or not we news them or we lose them, and she's got her binger banger dinger clinger.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Is a real... This is like the SpaceX launch.
Blah, blah. That's okay. They'll try again on Saturday. Oh, you got it. That one's a little better.
You know what? I'll try again on Saturday.
We'll wait until Saturday. You try again. Headline for you to decide on the number one. Donald Trump retweets, "The only good Democrat is a dead Democrat."
Oh, you stop your face and lose it immediately. He retweeted that?
He retweeted someone saying,
"I've come to a place where I've come to the conclusion that the only good Democrat is a dead Democrat."
That was at a rally with Cowboys for Trump.
That story was the, checks out.
The head of the Cowboys for Trump said, "The only good Democrat is a dead one," and Trump retweeted that this morning.
Cool, moving, great, so right awesome.
Along. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you, Donald Trump, for... Wow, okay. Number two, mysterious fast radio bursts help detect missing matter in the universe.
Sure. I mean, radio making the universe better. Everyone still relies on radio at NASA. Just letting you know.
Well, NASA doesn't exist, so maybe we don't either. And finally,
Did you say NASA doesn't exist?
No, it's not real, Allie. We've gone over this the last couple of days, hon.
Haven't you been paying attention? Sorry, it's my vegetarian brain.
It's your veggie brain that NASA's not real. You might as well call them Lionsgate or any other studio, right? Like, it's all fake. So, last headline. USA Today's take on Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande's new song is so straight, Twitter can't handle it.
What about the Ellen story?
There's an Ellen story? Do you have a news at Allie?
Yes, I want you to news the Ellen story.
Oh, I was trying to give her a break. I really was. Oh,
okay, all right,
fine.
Wait, give me the Gaga one. Go on.
No, that's fine. At 1 point for each fat roll, Ellen DeGeneres angers fans by raiding staff members' newborn babies. Oh,
lose it.
We're newsing that one. Okay, fine. So really quick, we'll do these very fast. So listen, essentially, long story short, if you take all of the matter that should have existed in the universe from the Big Bang, scientists can only come up with about 50% of the matter. They can't figure out where the other 50% of the matter is. Well, now, fast radio bursts, FRBs, are these like millisecond bursts of radio waves that occur in very, very distant galaxies. They're reaching the Earth, and scientists have now been able to sort of use these radio waves in some sort of made-up NASA way that they're now like, oh, they're not acting like matter that we know matter. They're acting like matter in a different way. This is probably the other 50% of the matter that we can't find.
No way. So radio is helping us humans discover matter that we did not know about related to the Big Bang.
I mean, if you want to interpret it that way.
No, I think radio is saving the universe.
Radio is saving the universe.
Why are all these radio waves just telling me to go to JCPenney and and download and like get erectile dysfunction medication?
Right. Why is it 25% off Memorial Day weekend? Fine. At your local JCPenney. Wait, that's going to save the universe?
Oh, universe, damn right. You.
Oh, gosh darn it. Okay, so last week,
just a bunch of guys in Hawaiian shirts.
Right, exactly. So two people not in Hawaiian shirts ever, Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande, dropped Rain On Me last week, right? Gaga's album comes out this weekend. Like, it's a really, really big deal for them right now. So the USA Today tweeted out their review of the song. Here's the tweet. Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande teamed up for Rain On Me, an upbeat dance track where each singer takes a turn with a verse. They also sing together on some of the choruses.
What?
That's the Twitter review from USA Today of Lady
Gaga. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, so Chrissy Teigen's actually response to this was great. She was like, or otherwise known as a duet.
Right. That's every single collaboration ever.
So Twitter goes on to say, when you fire all of the arts and entertainment writers, so the remaining straight dude on staff who usually just covers sports has to review the song. And then someone else said, actually, that's funny because it's true. Later on, you see a tweet where someone is like, I used to follow the arts and entertainment writer for USA Today. She's been furloughed. She's posting about having to go to the stand in the unemployment line, and she's only getting 25% of her monthly pay. So that's actually what was happening.
It is some random old straight white guy who's like, I took turns with verses and sang verses.
Isn't that great? And Twitter's had a field day with this. And I guess we'll either have to let Ellen off the hook, Allie, or talk about her in happy endings. It's up to you.
The grilling of Ellen continues. The exciting conclusion of Drop the Subject after this.
Drop the Subject. The new Channel Q.
Oh, you know, the bad news is that, yeah, we're going to have to get out of here because, unfortunately, our bus only wants us on for 4 hours a day. Huh?
I'm gonna need you to come in on Saturday, though.
I'm going to need you to launch that SpaceX rocket on Saturday.
Go ahead and just host that show on Saturday. Yeah.
I probably would, to be honest. I'm like, oh, sure. You could just tell me it's Friday. I'd probably believe you.
Over and over. It'd be like your own Groundhog Friday, just over and over again.
What's going on with Ellen? We must find out before we give you our happy endings.
Oh, so, man, Ellen, this one's hard, okay? Because I'm not sure, I'm not necessarily sure how I feel about this. 1 point for each fat roll. Ellen DeGeneres angers fans by raiding staff members' newborn babies. Here's the thing. So she was like, all right. She tweeted out, where's this tweet? My staff has a lot of beautiful additions to their families. Clearly, they had to be raided. So Ellen goes on to rate babies from staff members that have been born during COVID-19. And she
are like, these the same staff members that aren't getting paid?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm sure they are getting paid now, would be my guess. Like one child was rated an 8 for looking confused, but then got points deducted for not wearing Ellen merchandise. So I feel like maybe out of context, because she says at the beginning of this that, like, traditionally on the show, she's done this before. So this is not like a new thing. So I think, is this people piling on, like me being the guy who brings this up all the time? I feel like maybe people are just piling on, like they're finding any reason now to hate on Ellen. But it does just appear a little, just, I don't know, maybe a little tone deaf right now to just be like rating babies. But then I don't know, she's a comedian and it's really hard to come up with content from home right now.
It is, but it's not if you're Ellen and you have a whole staff of people that are helping you create content. And I normally, under normal circumstances, I think rating babies is great. Docking points for not wearing Ellen merchandise is a little bit douchey, but I think in general, rating babies, hilarious. If there's a baby thigh gap or a baby fat roll or whatever, but like eyes too far, that's fine, whatever. But the fact that all of her staff members and previous staff members and previous bodyguards have been speaking up about what a bitch she is. The response is then to rate their babies. Like, it's just not the right time. If you had done that, if Ellen had done that last year, 2019 Ellen, that would have gone over gangbusters. Would have been great.
Well, and I think
2020 Ellen can't rate her staff babies.
Right. I think she has done this bit before, but maybe this is one of those where you're like, well, just because it worked 9 months ago, A, before COVID, and B, before the world has started speaking all of this mess about you. Anyway, I don't know. Ellen, someday you're going to be the subject of our happy ending and not our music, Ellen. Someday. Because I'm not canceling Ellen, just for the record. I'm not canceling her.
I'm not either. You know what? I will never not like Ellen DeGeneres because she has been so instrumental and such an icon in the LGBTQ community. And I used to have all of her stand-up specials memorized. I love Ellen. I just think that there's some changes that she's made with her personality. And hey, if you want to hold her accountable, great. Maybe it'll make her a better person and then she can remember the good old days. You know what I mean? I think that there'll be plenty of times that there's plenty of time left for us to love Ellen again. And I'm not canceling her either. I don't want to cancel somebody. I don't like to cancel anybody except for the Me Too people. I mean, cancel those guys.
Yeah.
Anyway. Happy endings. Here we go. This is when we turn things around, make it happy. Even though there were sad things we talked about on the show or bummer town things, of course, we find something positive, a little nugget, a little ray of sunshine to take into the rest of your Thursday. James, lay it on me. Happy ending. Go.
It may be the end of an era. The quarantine scavenger hunt is now over, finally. In good news, at least Jesse finally won something.
Oh, good job, Jesse. Good job, yes, Jesse. Congratulations.
There's
he
a
won
first
nothing.
For everything.
He's telling us to wrap it up. You're a jerk, all right? You know what? Here's my happy ending. SpaceX may have been a failure to launch, but at least it wasn't as bad as the movie Failure to Launch.
Oh, very good. That one was good, Allie. Yep, that was just hanging right there.
And it was just hanging right there. I took it, low-hanging fruit. Thank you very much. Yep, and the play-by-play gave us uncut gems like this.
Looks like he is out of Crew Dragon now, and Doug Hurley following suit. No pun intended.
Ah, nerd jokes. Yes, that makes everybody happy, and that's always a good way to end a show. We will see you tomorrow. We've got Jason Carter, of course. He is always hanging out with us on Fridays now to let us know about entertainment goings-on in the world. We're going to talk to Dr. Jen as well. And we're going to talk to her about sexting, actually, and how to keep your love life interesting, especially if you're going long distance during COVID-19, and much, much more. So, and download the podcast if you missed anything on today's show. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye. Curious.
On the next, drop the subject.
Get this overrated narcissist off my screen.
Hey, I'm right here.
No, Allie, it's our new game, Who Tweeted It? We read a tweet, and you guess if it was said about Kellyanne Conway or the latest victim of cancel culture, Ellen DeGeneres.
Ooh, you mean Ellen DeNotso-Generous.
We'll also talk to Dr. Jen about the importance of sexting while quarantined, and Jason Carter tells us all about the legendary show on HBO Max.
What's it called?
Legendary, Allie.
Drop the subject. 12 to 2 Pacific, 3 to 5 Eastern on the new Channel Q.